नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7. Text 57, right? 57 to 68, I think it is, yeah. 57 to 68. Now we're doing the story of the pigeon. Pigeon, as Prabhupada would say. When I first read this, I thought, pigeons in the forest? See, and we always see pigeons in the city. So I Googled it. Actually, pigeons started out in the forest. There are still many forest pigeons. But somehow or other, they like it in the town. I don't know what it is, but they like the buildings. Yeah. So anyway, probably used to talk about pigeons, didn't he? How they would have sex 100 times a day. So, text. Now, what I'm going to do is just read the English until we get to the end. The last verse has a purport, so many verses. Actually, I'll start with the beginning of the story, which is a couple of verses back. The lesson here is, this is text 52, once you never indulge in excessive affection, uti, excessive, or concern for anyone or anything. Otherwise, one will have to experience great suffering, just like the foolish pigeon. So, here's the story. There once was a pigeon who lived in the forest along with his wife. He had built a nest within a tree and lived there for several years in her company. The two pigeons were very much devoted to their household duties. Their hearts being tied together by sentimental affection, they were each attracted by the other's glances, bodily features, and states of mind. Thus they completely bound each other in affection. Oh, what beautiful feathers you have. Look at that beak. Whew. Naively trusting in the future, they carried out their acts of resting, sitting, walking, standing, conversing, playing, eating, and so forth as a loving couple among the trees of the forest. Whenever she desired anything, O King, the she-pigeon would flatteringly cajole her husband, and he in turn would gratify her by faithfully doing whatever she wanted, even with great personal difficulty. Thus he could not control his senses in her association. Then the female pigeon experienced her first pregnancy. When the time arrived, the chaste lady delivered a number of eggs within the nest in the presence of her husband. When the time was ripe, baby pigeons with tender limbs and feathers, created by the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, were born from those eggs. The two pigeons became most affectionate to their children and took great pleasure in listening to their awkward chirping, which sounded very sweet to the parents. Thus with love they began to raise the little birds who were born of them. The parent birds became very joyful by observing the soft wings of their children, their chirping, their lovely innocent movements around the nest, and their attempts to jump up and fly. Seeing their children happy, the parents were also happy. Their hearts bound to each other by affection, the foolish birds, completely bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, continued to take care of the young offspring who had been born to them. One day, the two heads of the family went out to find food for the children. Being very anxious to feed their offspring properly, they wandered all over the forest for a long time. At that time, a certain hunter who happened to be wandering through the forest saw the young pigeons moving about near their nest. Spreading out his nest, he captured them all. The pigeon and his wife were always anxious for the maintenance of their children, and they were wandering in the forest for that purpose. Having obtained proper food, they now returned to their nest. When the lady pigeon caught sight of her own children trapped within the hunter's net, she was overwhelmed with anguish, and crying out, she rushed toward them as they cried out to her in return. The lady pigeon had always allowed herself to be bound by the ropes of intense material affection, and thus her mind was overwhelmed by anguish. Being in the grip of the illusory energy of the Lord, she completely forgot herself, and rushing forward to her helpless children, she was immediately bound in the hunter's net. Seeing her own children, who were more dear to, seeing his own children, who were more dear to him than life itself, fatally bound in the hunter's net along with his dearmost wife, whom he considered equal in every way to himself, the poor male pigeon began to lament wretchedly. So we'll chant this verse. Aho, alas, may my pasyuta, just see, apayam, the destruction, opapunyasya, of him whose pious credit has been insufficient, durmate, unintelligent, atriptasya, unsatisfied, akrita artasya, of him who has not fulfilled the purpose of his life, griha, the family life, Trivaidika, comprising the three aims of civilized existence, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Hattaha, ruined. Aho me pasyuta payam. Opapunyasya durmate. Atriptasya krupartasya Grihastrai vargiko hata Aho me pasyutapayam Opapunyasya durmate Atriptasya krupartasya Grihastrai vargiko hata Aho me pasyutapayam Opapunyasya durmate Atriptasya kritarkasya Grihastrai vargiko hata
Opapunyasya durmate Atriptasya kritarthasya Grihastrai vargiko hata Aho me pasyutapayam Opapunyasya durmate Atriptasya kritarthasya Grihastrai vargiko hata Aho me pasyutapayam Opapunyasya durmate Atriptasya kritarthasya Grihastrai vargiko hata
Ladies?
Aho me pasyutapayam
Aho me pasyutapayam
Opapunyasya durmate
Atriptasya kritarthasya
Grihastrai vargiko hata
Grihastrai vargiko hata Aho me paschitapayam. Apapanyasya durmate. Akitasya kintakasya.
Translation. The male pigeon said, "Alas, just see how I am now destroyed. I am obviously a great fool, for I did not properly execute pious activities. I could not satisfy myself, nor could I fulfill the purpose of life. My dear family, which was the basis of my religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, is now hopelessly ruined." Purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word atriptasya indicates that the pigeon was not satisfied with the sense gratification he had achieved. Although he was completely attached to his wife, children, and nest, he could not sufficiently enjoy them, since there is ultimately no satisfaction in such things. Apritartasya indicates that his hopes and dreams for further expansion of his sense gratification were now also ruined. People commonly refer to their home, sweet home, as their nest, and money put aside for future sense gratification is called a nest egg. Therefore, all the lovebirds of the material world should clearly note how their so-called wife, children, and fortune will all be dragged away in a hunter's net. In other words, death will finish everything. On that happy note, Om Jnana Timinantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This is a nice example of how there are different levels in life. Trivargika usually is considered a good thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about living life on different levels and being satisfied at different levels. Materially, we have to have enough food and so on. And socially, we have our social lives. All these things keep us happy and balanced as human beings. Mentally, we have to have our minds together. Sometimes I comment that Prabhupada uses this phrase, we should just take enough to keep body and soul together. So I always think you have to include mind in there too. You might have enough to eat, but if your mind is going crazy, you may need a little bit more to eat. Or nicer things to eat, so that you don't, you know, freak out, basically. So we have to have a normal life, I might say. As I'm reading this story, I'm thinking, imagine someone just dropping in, reading this Bible time, and just starting to read this story, they'll think, well, that's a nice story. Nice, loving family, mother and father taking care of their children. And of course, the children are about ready to die. Of course, they're going to do something about it. And then you get to the end, and it's, this is all bad. This attachment is just Maya. So, is it Maya? Or is it natural? Prabhupada says, you know, affection for one's family is natural. But it also seems like it's Maya. So, for me, everything in Krishna consciousness is complicated. This is another one of those complicated things. Recently, I was at the wedding of Bani and Varun. So you go to these weddings and you see, oh, it's so nice. This couple is in love. And there are all the vows that they take. And I'm not thinking, oh, this is just Maya. Many years ago, this was in the heyday of the zonal acharya systems. So one of these sannyasi zonal acharyas was conducting a wedding. And in the wedding, he said, so today you're married, tomorrow you begin renouncing. So I was a brahmacharya, and I thought, yay, yeah, that's right. So I don't think people say that kind of thing anymore, and I don't think it's even true. I think what we say is love each other. You should love each other. If you don't love each other, it's not going to last. Actually, that marriage didn't last. There is place for love in Krishna consciousness. So it's almost as if we can be so cynical about it. So what is the balance? And we probably appear cynical to people if they hear such a thing. They go to someone's wedding and you tell them the next day you have to start renouncing, you know, becoming detached. Today we become attached, tomorrow we become detached and start working on that. So that's probably not so good for married life. So trying to resolve all this, it's difficult. You know, for one thing, we have Varnashram, which you go through different stages. And there is a stage of life. I looked up some classes where Prabhupada spoke on similar topics. I had in my mind, it's interesting how this happened. We sometimes talk about these mystical things kind of happen. I had this verse for a few days, because I had read, you know, what I was going to give class on like a week ago or something. So I kind of knew what the topic was. And I had this phrase in my mind, Kogriheshu. How does it go? Kogriheshu. I forget the next words, but Kogriheshu. I just had this Kogriheshu. What is this Kogriheshu? Kogriheshu. Must have something to do with Grihastha life, married life, family life. So you see, I looked it up. I must have heard it from Prabhupada, and somehow it made an impression in my mind. It's one of Prahlad Maharaj's teachings to his classmates. And where he talks about, you know, how can a householder is basically finished. He lives in household life, and the children speak so sweetly, and it captures his heart, and his wife serves him so nicely. And that's the idea of this verse and a series of verses after all have to do with this. So I looked up a proper speaking on this verse, and he talks a lot about Vairagya. This movement is about Vairagya. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. So, even in household life, we're supposed to be thinking about Vairagya. And this came up recently in one of the classes, I think the Prabhupada Pushkar's class, where he quotes so many verses. And he was talking about Kunti Devi, because that's always something that kind of ties into this. Kunti Devi's asking about, please sever my tie of affection to my family. And we're thinking, who is her family? She's, you know, the Yadus and the Kurus, or the Pandavas. So I was thinking this verse has, this, because of Kunti's predicament and who she is, it gives us some insight into this. So I found something quite interesting when I was looking at this. First I read Prabhupada's purport, then I read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. And what I found was basically Prabhupada's presenting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. So I'm going to read that. There are two verses together, and it's interesting, some of the points that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur brings out. I was kind of confused a little bit when I read Prabhupada's, because it seemed like he was saying two different things. I wasn't quite sure what he was emphasizing. So anyway, these are the two verses. Hey, this is Prabhupada's translation to the first one. It begins, Atha Vishvesha Vishvatman Vishvamurti. So she addresses Krishna, Kunti Devi. She says, O Lord of the universe, O soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe. So Vishva Isha, Vishva Atman, Vishvamurti. Please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vishnis. Now in Bhanuswami's translation, what Bhanuswami often does is that he bases his translation on the commentary. So sometimes for the commentary to make sense, he has to translate the verse a little differently than Srila Prabhupada did. Now he keeps the translation on this one, basically, a little bit different. He says, please cut my strong bonds of affection for my relatives, the Pandavas and Yadavas. So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary. Now this is Kunti Devi. He's basically saying, this is what Kunti Devi is saying here. To Krishna, she's speaking to Krishna. both your departure from here, there in Hastinapur, while she's speaking, both your departure from here and coming here are unfortunate. Departure is unfortunate for the Pandavas, because you're leaving the Pandavas. Coming here for the Yadavas, when you come here from Dwarka, then that's unfortunate for the Dwarkavasis, the Yadavas, or the Vrishnis. The same, the word used is Vrishnishu. That's the Yadavas, they're also called the Vrishnis. So then, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, since she ends up with a disturbed mind in either case, Kunti prays to cut off her ties of affection with both parties. So this, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is reading this motivation into what she's saying. She's saying, it disturbs me because I feel affection for both sides, and in either case, it doesn't matter whether you're coming here or going there, or going there and coming here. Either way, somebody on one side is going to be disturbed. So that disturbs me, because I have affection for both sides. So suddenly I have affection so I don't have to be disturbed. Basically is what Vishwanath is saying. And then she says, yes, he's paraphrasing her again here. You are the Lord of the universe, Vishvesha. You give life to all the universes, Vishvatman. Though you are the form of the universe, being an ocean of mercy, you are always attentive in regards to the welfare of the Yadavas and Pandavas. Will I die uselessly by thinking of their welfare? So to me this was a bit of a head scratcher. She's saying that you're always attentive to their welfare. Will I die uselessly by thinking of their welfare? It seems to me what the idea is here is, why should I worry? Why am I worrying myself to death, basically? It seems to be what she's saying. Am I going to worry myself to death for no reason? Because actually, you always look after their welfare, so everything is going to be. She's saying unfortunate. They're unfortunate. But there's nothing unfortunate about either side. Because you're the Lord of the universe, you're the form of the universe, you give life to all the universes, so you're going to take care of them. They're going to be all right. So I don't have to worry myself to death. That's the way I read this. Now here what Srila Prabhupada says here about this. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Vrishnis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both families. Both the families required the Lord's help, because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas, but by doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. So you see, basically, Prabhupada is saying the same thing as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. It's troubling her mind. I have affection on both sides. And so then Prabhupada gets a little more philosophical here. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. So of course this is a philosophical point. This is one reason why we decry attachment. For one thing, of course, it keeps us in this material world. But also, if you're too attached to your family, then you don't have time for others to spread Krishna consciousness to others. I remember Satsarupa Maharaj, he wrote a really nice poem about Srila Prabhupada. And one of there's one part of that where he's saying, please let him out. It's we are asking, basically. We're asking Prabhupada's family, please let him go. Please let him go. Because we're out here dying in this material world. And if you keep him there, he's staying there in that griha, then who's going to save us? So this Prabhupada is referring to that here. So this goes back to this idea that came up before, bhakti. too much attachment. If you have too much attachment to your family, then all your energy, all your consciousness, all your love is focused there, and you don't share, you don't give Krishna consciousness to others. The typical example is the band of the six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belong to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes, but for the benefit of the mass of population, they left behind their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a little bit long. Let's see. Let me just read something at the end here. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the heart out of family affection. So here Prabhupada is seeing something more into the honorifics, the glorification of Krishna, the means that she's using in addressing Krishna. So he's the Lord of the universe. He can break everything. He can break the whole universe to pieces. So he can break my band of affection also. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his family affection, out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. So this may be a little autobiographical here, where Srila Prabhupada talks about having to leave ordinary. Yasyahanam gurunami hatisheta dhamshanaya. That same idea is basically here. So what's interesting is the next verse. So this is Kunti Devi, so she's praying, please talk, break my tower of affection. And then in the next verse she says, O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So there's a reason these two verses come together. Of course, as you can see, break my tie of affection to my family so they can flow directly to you. This is how Venu Swami translates this. Let my mind, with attention fixed on no other object, repeatedly carry its affection to you, chief of the Madhu dynasty, just as the Ganga carries a full stream of water to the ocean. Commentary. So this is Krishna speaking. So she just said, break my tie of affection to the Pandavas. So Krishna says, actually I should have read this first, because sometimes this happens. What comes between the verses is what's important. So she said, break my tie of affection. So Krishna says, then do you want realization of Brahma? Because if you cut your affection for the Yadavas, you will cut your affection for me also. And then she says, no, let my affection flow to you. The Ganges to the ocean. So this is his explanation of this. So this is Kunti Devi again, paraphrasing. May my mind hold affection for you without any obstacle. Udvaha means flow strongly. The mind should not think of anything else. Your devotees are no different from you, and thus without affection for them, affection for you cannot take place. It is not possible that this could please you. In other words, if I bring my entire affection to them, and therefore I end up losing my affection for you, that certainly can't please you. This I know. Therefore, let my mind have attraction for no one except you and your devotees. I pray to have affectionate bonds with the Pandavas and Yadavas, who are your devotees. But since it is a prayer in front of you, it means cutting only the material affection which arises from bodily identification. It is not cutting the affectionate relation with you. I want to cut that affection which causes bondage. Just as the Ganga carries a full stream of water to the ocean, the shelter of small and large rivers, may my mind also carry its affection to you, who are the shelter of all devotees. So, I'm not going to read a Prabhupada's purport, but basically Prabhupada makes the same point where he talks about the relation of skin. As Prabhupada's colorful way of talking about it. She's asking Krishna to break, she says, here the affection, the Kunti Devi is saying, Here the affection for the Pandavas and Rishis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Relations of the soul established in relation to the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti Devi wants to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. So that's Prabhupada's nice poetic way of describing it. So this is, I guess you could say, this is really the resolution of the whole thing, isn't it? You put Krishna in the center, whether you're in family life, or you're in brahmachari life, or sannyas life, or brahmastra life, or anything in between. We have all kinds of ashrams these days. We have a lot of householders that don't have husband or wife, but they have a house. So, in any case, whatever your situation is, Krishna should be in the center. That's the family, just like we have this principle, of course, anasakta shivishana netarhama vijanjata. Yukta vairagya, this principle of yukta vairagya. It's an interesting phrase, actually, because yukta means to engage, like putting gear. Yuktasya bhaktanam chanyam jatopi. It has the same root as yoga, so connect. And then vairagya means vigatavara iti vairagya. To do away with raga. What is raga? Raga is attachment. So it's detached attachment, you might say. So how do you do that? You do by seeing everything in relation to Krishna. You connect everything to Krishna. With that connection, you connect it to Krishna, then everything works out. Theoretically. In real life, of course, there's a challenge. There's always a tension. As long as you're in material life, there's going to be a tension between these two things. Just like sometimes when people first come to Krishna consciousness and they hear, I'm not this body, then they think, I should have nothing to do with the body then. Right? I shouldn't eat, I shouldn't do it. You know. I'm not this body. No, there's a balance that has to take place. So soon we have our ordinary lives. And that takes some intelligence and sometimes counseling and so on. But this principle is there. Put Krishna in the center, and that'll make the balance work out. All right, let's stop here. Just read the last verse. What happened here? I lost my spot. 68. The male pigeon said, "Alas, just see how I am now destroyed. I am obviously a great fool, for I did not properly execute pious activities. I could not satisfy myself, nor could I fulfill the purpose of life. My dear family, which was the basis of my religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, is now hopelessly ruined." Yes, Namaste Prabhu.
As far as I remember, the next verse, but it might be the next verse, where Kunti addresses Krishna as Krishna Sakha, as a friend of Arjuna. I don't know if you have.
I think it's the next verse.
It is the next
Krishna
verse.
Krishna Sakhaiti.
Yeah. And so that again proves the point that Prabhupada is making, that she's seeing that Krishna, Arjuna is a friend of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's seeing that devoted relationship, and she addresses him. Why would she address him right away after that, Krishna Sakha?
Mm-hmm.
So her heart is seeing that my relationship with Krishna and with Arjuna is Krishna's friend. So that's kind of sweet. Right after that, she mentions that.
And that's one, of course, that's one of the arguments we make about family affection too. We say, well, see your family as Vaishnavas and love them as Vaishnavas. And even as, of course, as life goes on, a couple, as they progress in married life and raise a family and so on, then that should be more on that side, more seeing them as Vaishnava than seeing as my wife or my husband and so on. So that's what, it's almost as if Kunti Devi is praying for that vision herself. Let me see them in relation to you and not as my family. Cut off that side of it, that part of the thinking. Maharaj.
There are other times in the popular music, they really kind of expose themselves or expose many of people, including ourselves, at least formally. There was a song called Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. And the guy is just glorifying, you know, the idea of becoming attached. And he has children, and then they have grandchildren. And it was all because she had kisses sweeter than wine. That was the thing that the prime mover of the whole thing. And then at the end, it's a very interesting stanza where he says, if I had the opportunity, I'd do it all over again. So he didn't, I guess the hunter didn't catch him yet. In that case, he didn't quite learn the lesson. I guess the whole key is that the attachment, everything has to be based on Krishna consciousness, because it doesn't seem, I appreciate the fact that you said that you find Prabhupada's books are complicated. Now, some people would object to that and say, no, you mean, Prabhupada's so clear. He's very, very clear, but there's something very, very deep going on. And it's kind of, I justify feeling that way myself by just saying, Prabhupada said that you should read my book scrutinizing. Now, to scrutinize something means that if there's an apparent contradiction, it'll sort of jump off the page at you if you're really looking for that. And then you're going to understand it on a deeper level and understand more nuance. So I don't think it's bad necessarily to recognize complexity where it's there. I'm just thinking of the verse in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 5, text 7. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma chitandriya sarva bhutatva bhutatma kurvanapi na lipyate. In that verse, there's no contradiction at all between being advanced and being one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, who controls his mind and senses. He's dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. I heard that Prabhupada traveling, one of his entourage members said, Srila Prabhupada, everywhere we go, everybody loves you so much. And Prabhupada says, it's because I am completely free from sex life. He says, well, what's the connection between one and the other? But there it is, Vijitatma Jitendriya, Sarva Bhutatva Bhutatma. When he was actually a Goswami, he's dear to both the ruffians and the, and etc. So, but then I guess there's a difference between being dear to everyone and everyone being dear to you, you're seeing them all as part and parcel of Krishna, and then material attachment, or, you know, becoming attached. There's some scope for spiritual attachment, but then if that waxes material, then that's not the level of achievement described in that verse. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you. Madam Mohan, please.
Sometimes I think about how we're chip off the old block, we're part and parcel of Krishna. So the qualities that Krishna has, we have, and they're just perverted now into the material environment. So we see that when Krishna, his son was at Samba, was kidnapped, I think it was by Duryodhana, his daughter's advisor or something like that. Duryodhana's daughter, you know the story, right?
Samba kidnapped the wife. Yeah.
So when they heard about it, they mobilized like the whole dynasty to go and to get him back, to fight with him. So I was thinking this affection that we feel, it's not unnatural in the sense where it's coming from. It just gets perverted in contact with the false ego and the bodily identification. But that's you know, considered a source. You know, where does it come from? So in that sense, it, for me, it connects it all the way up to see that these impulses we have are just being generated originally from the soul, but in contact with the material environment, they get perverted, and that's all the problem. So, does that sound like...
The difference between attachment to Krishna, too, is you get the highest ecstasy. Attachment in this world, you get the highest misery.
So therefore, one
or the lowest, worst misery. There's no worse misery than being separated from someone you love, you know, like a child dies. And what more painful thing can there be for someone in this world, you know, lose someone you love in this world? And of course, we see it in Krishna Leela when they're separated from Krishna, but it looks like pain, but it's the highest ecstasy, that attachment.
So sometimes that makes me wonder that we're also separated from Krishna, so Krishna wants us back.
Yeah.
And he's feeling that separation from us, and sets up the whole yada yada. He comes again and again to attract us back to him. So it mentioned a couple places that he's feeling some pain because we're not with him. It's that lecture, April 24th, 1975, in Vrindavan, where Prabhupada explains that.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.